This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Earlier this week, I spoke with Danish politician Margrethe Vestager. She's the European Commission's Commissioner for Competition, and it's not a stretch to say she's one of the most important people in the world when it comes to regulating big tech. One newspaper article described her as putting the fear of God into Silicon Valley. For Americans who aren't familiar with your work, how would you introduce yourself and say what you do?
I'm a member of the European Commission. I'm one of the executive vice presidents. But what takes a lot of time in my everyday life is to make sure that the European market is open, that it's fair, that everyone who does business here can do their business by the same rule book.
Vestager has pursued case after case against the biggest tech companies in the world. She's won fines against Apple, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Qualcomm. Now she's the driving force behind a landmark piece of legislation, the Digital Markets Act, which is likely to reshape how tech companies do business in Europe and around the world. Today on the show, a candid conversation with the woman Silicon Valley fears most. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Margrethe Vestager of the European Commission is coming off a busy few weeks. Her office has opened an investigation into an agreement between Google and Facebook, now Meta, to seemingly kill off ad tech competition. And then, in late March, European lawmakers agreed on the parameters of the Digital Markets Act, or DMA. It's a landmark law that designates companies of a certain size as gatekeepers and says they can't use their heft to box out competition. Companies that run app stores, for example, would have to let their users download apps from other places as well.
The Digital Markets Act will make sure that those who have giant market power also have responsibility in the market, to make sure that anyone else can do their business without being sort of held back or held down or demoted by those who keep the gate.
You know, the parameters of gatekeepers that you've defined, 75 billion euros in market cap, 45 million active monthly users, clearly that is the big five: Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and Microsoft. But I wonder, are there other companies that you had in mind when you were creating this, or were you really thinking, let's go for the big five here?
It may be a number of companies. What we have been trying to do is to translate our knowledge about market power. How does a company look that is dominant in the marketplace? And because of that dominance, also have the kind of power that can make it really difficult for anyone else to make it in that marketplace. So I've myself been really, really careful not to think about companies, but to think about market power, and how to make sure that that market power gets the responsibility that comes with power.
I think one could describe the backlash against big tech in the U.S. as looking at the major players and saying they're too big, break them up. But when I look at the Digital Markets Act, you all seem to be taking a different approach. I wonder how you would describe that approach.
Well, if it should be as a slogan, you'd say, don't break them up, break them open. In Europe, we do have legislation that would enable us to break up companies if that was the only thing that would make the market work. But we would not know what would happen in the European market by that kind of action. What we would know is that we would definitely end up in court. And while in court, you know, the risk was that the market was left unattended. So we chose to say, well, listen, you're more than welcome to be successful in the European markets, but with success comes power, and with power comes responsibility. And that last link between power and responsibility, well, that needs to be reinforced.
Well, let's take, you know, the example of a company like Apple. They present their service as safer, that the App Store is a walled garden, it's private, it adheres to their security standards. Tim Cook has talked about this publicly. Clearly, they see that as a selling point for consumers. Under the Digital Markets Act, they would let users download apps from other places. Do you buy their contention that keeping things walled off is safer?
Well, I think safety is a concern for everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what kind of phone you have, no matter what kind of apps you download. So I think it's important that the question of safety is not used as a wall against healthy competition, where also your competitors will have to answer to their customers about safety. If you're not happy with the shop where you do your shopping, well, you try to find somewhere else to go without having to change the entire city or to go, you know, to a different planet. You just want to be able to go around the corner and see what's on offer there. And of course, you expect also the other store to have sufficient safeguards so that whatever you buy is actually not harming you.
There's also this idea of interoperability that I find really interesting, that if, say, I use Signal as my messaging platform, that I could send a message to someone on WhatsApp. Why make that a part of this law?
It's to enable convenience for users, if that should be part of the character of the services that you're offering. We know it from emails. You know, you can be in a very different email environment, and yet, you know, I can send an email to you even though you have a different provider. So it's basically not a new thing. It's just a new thing within messaging services.
I want to talk a little bit about the enforcement part of this. How do you see the enforcement piece of the Digital Markets Act working? And I wonder if there are lessons you learned doing so much enforcement.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had not one, not two, but three Google cases that we finalized already. Now we're on the fourth. We've had two Amazon cases. We have two again. We have had three Apple cases. We now have a Facebook case as well. And what I have seen is that, first, it takes a lot of time to prove that a company is dominant in the relevant market. And only then can you look at the illegal behavior. And the second point is that our cases, they work in the very specifics in that market with that illegal behavior. But it is as if they don't spread. It is as if there is something systemic about some of the things that we see. And if something is systemically wrong, well, then you also need a systemic answer to that. And this is why, you know, I've come to see that for the competition law enforcement in specific cases to be really effective, well, then we need the regulation to work with it. Otherwise, we will not be able to provide the change that is needed. And the change that is needed is for the market really to be open, to be contestable, for other businesses to have a fair chance of making it in that marketplace to the benefit of us as customers.
So basically putting the mechanism at the front end instead of at the back end after years of legal work.
Exactly. That was well put. I will remember that.
Well, one aspect of this is obviously fines. But, you know, we have seen the big tech companies just say, OK, fine, we will pay. You know, Apple just did this in the Netherlands. Don't you run the risk of companies saying, like, we'll pay whatever we have to and keep business as usual?
Well, I think it depends on the level of fines still. In the Netherlands, they paid a weekly fine of 5 million euros. I think for most people, quite a lot of money. Obviously not for Apple, since they made that choice. But for the Digital Markets Act, if you do not live up to your obligations, the cap of the fine is 10% of global turnover.
Pretty big.
And if you're a repeat offender, then the cap is 20% of global turnover. So you're talking about fines that you cannot just sort of push aside as cost of doing business.
Why do you think the U.S. lags behind Europe when it comes to enforcement and fines?
Well, you know, actually, I don't understand it. Take privacy. U.S. is, you know, the prime defender of the rights of the individual, the rights to pursue your dreams, the right to have weapons, individual rights beyond what you see in many European countries. And yet it's Europe who insists on the rights to privacy for the individual. And when it comes to the market, you know, I know no one but Americans who say, you know, you can start a business, you can make it. This is the dream. You can challenge everyone out there in that market. So why is it in Europe that we try to make sure that that market is really open and contestable and that people are not being manipulated? So, you know, I have no answer to your question, because I would think that it was a thing that would fit perfectly with the US culture and the American dream.
When we come back, how the January 6th attack inspired European regulators to move quickly.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Digital Markets Act is just one half of Margrethe Vestager's regulatory push from the European Commission. It has a counterpart, the Digital Services Act. That piece of legislation is aimed at platforms and social media.
The Digital Markets Act opens the market. The Digital Services Act makes it a real thing that what we have decided in our democracy to be illegal when we're offline is also illegal and acted upon when we're online. So platforms will be obliged to take down, for instance, a post that is being flagged to them as illegal in form, and then the one who put up the post can complain about it in order to make sure that freedom of expression is preserved. Because sometimes things are not illegal. They may hurt you. They may be gross, but they're not illegal. And that mechanism should enable that. And the second thing that they will be obliged to do is to make sort of a general risk assessment. Can my services be misused to undermine democracy or be putting people's mental health at risk? Or are they in themselves working in a way that would have these really, really bad effects? For me, that is really important, that the two things complement one another, that as a platform, you have a responsibility as to how do my services affect people and the society that I'm part of. And how does the use of my service in all these many, many millions of individual cases live up to what has been decided in our democracy as being illegal?
It's very hard to listen to you and not think about what we have seen on social media platforms in the U.S., particularly around the sort of insurrection on January 6th in the Capitol. To me, that feels like something that under your laws would cross the line.
Well, I think exactly that attack on Congress also had a huge imprint here in Europe. In an old, well-established democracy, to have such an attack and for that being so fueled by social media and the use of social media, I think for us that was sort of a wake-up call with no snooze. No time to wait. We need to get things done now in order for this not to happen. Undermining democracy, it cannot take place. We do not accept it in the real world either.
Europe has really been on the forefront of tech regulation. Are you hopeful that your work on the Digital Markets Act will become global, will be the sort of blueprint for how other governments should conduct themselves?
Well, you know, when we adopted sort of this general data protection laws, Europe was way ahead of the curve. You know, this idea that you have rights to privacy also in digital, it was a new idea. And it's only a few years ago, which is mind-blowing. And slowly that has spread to many, many jurisdictions. You know, in India, they have passed privacy legislation. In many states of the United States, they've passed privacy legislation. So that is spreading. With this, the Digital Services Act and Digital Markets Act, Europe is still ahead of the curve, but not at all to the same degree. For instance, in South Korea, they have passed legislation that came into force 15th of April that looks very much like the provisions and app stores that we have in the Digital Markets Act. Number of the proposals tabled in the US with bipartisan support would have, you know, the same elements as either Digital Services Act or Digital Markets Act. So what I have experienced in these years is a lot of parallel thinking sort of converging into alignment as to what needs to be done here. And you know, that I find really, really encouraging, because we don't have a global competition authority. We don't have global data protection authorities. So when we're dealing with global companies, well, then I think alignment will make us so much more effective in making sure that citizens, they can stand their rights.
Do you think there should be some sort of global competition authority? I mean, I wonder kind of where you draw the line between what regulators should be doing in their own markets and to what degree they should be coordinating, because these companies are, as you say, global.
Of course, one is allowed to dream, but if one should be effective right now, you know, the task I have, the mission that my colleagues and Enforce and myself that we're on, is to make sure that things change for people in the market right now so that the market serves us as consumers and not the other way around.
In that vein, I noticed you tweeted a picture of yourself with Lina Khan from the FTC, Jonathan Cantor from the Justice Department. Am I wrong to read that as just a kind of a little poke toward the big tech companies?
Well, I think it's good for the world around us to know that we know each other well and we consider each other friends and that we talk about, of course, only things that we are allowed to talk about, but that we also that we do work together if at all possible.
I know we have just a little time left. I wonder if you could tell me what your digital life looks like and how it has changed the more enmeshed you become in these issues.
Well, I think first and foremost, I have become increasingly curious as to what is out there. How to do my shopping without using a giant platform. How to message my friends. Because actually sometimes I find that sort of the convenience of the giants is kind of numbing my curiosity. And it's curiosity that keeps me learning, keeps me interested, keeps me challenged. I'm not an engineer. I'm not tech savvy as such. But I think curiosity can actually take you to some very interesting places.
Margareta Vestager, thank you so much for your time.
It was my pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
Margareta Vestager is the Executive Vice President of the European Commission for Europe Fit for the Digital Age. That is it for the show today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks. We're edited by Tori Bosch. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family, and it's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. What Next? We'll be back next week. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.